War of the Worlds is a classic book that's made in, it's been radio shows, it's been made into movies. It's a movie about 10 years ago. It was made, and my friend and I went to it, a group of friends, and my friend had never read the book, he'd never heard any other versions of War of the Worlds, and at the end, he was very disappointed. And he just got up and yelled, "Bacteria!" I don't know if you've seen that movie, but the ending, or read the book, but the ending is one that kind of disappoints some people. The Happening is another movie with an interesting ending that just ends. It's the buildup of all this, oh no, everything's going to end, and then suddenly it says, oh, I guess the problem went away. That's like literally how that movie ends, is, oh, the problem went away, we're good now. That's that movie. Sometimes endings just ruin some stories, right? Certain stories, certain movies, the endings get ruined. But then sometimes endings are really good. Like, they really wrap up everything real nicely. Sometimes you finish a book and you just sit back and you're like, whoa, I'm really, really sad now that I'm not part of that anymore. There's feelings like that. Or Lord of the Rings, I liked the ending of those three movies really well. When Aragorn says, "You bow to no one," to the hobbits, it's like, ah, yeah, when you're watching that stuff like that. There are some endings that are really good, and just like all books and all movies and things such as that, the ending has arrived for our story of Daniel. Chapter 10 is the beginning of the end for Daniel. And I hope that as a preacher I can do the book justice, because it is a good ending. It's a big ending, though, and so I'm not going to be able to cover it all in one Sunday. We've been going chapter by chapter, and I'm going to continue doing that. There are three chapters left, 10, 11, and 12, so I really can't cover it all and do justice in one day. So today's like the introduction to the ending, and that's kind of how the chapters are broken up, too. Chapter 10 is the introduction, chapter 11 is the meat of the end, and chapter 12 is the end of the end. It's Daniel's final vision. He's had a life of tension, and the video I've shown at the beginning of sermons for this last half the book, this last one has pointed out that the visions, it's no longer Daniel interpreting like the king's dreams, it's now he's having visions, he's seeing glimpses of the end, he's having his own, visions are coming to him, and some of them are things that make dynasty changes and kings seem like piddly little things, some of these visions. Today is kind of one of those. This is an apocalyptic vision that we get into. It's a powerful vision. It's one that verse 1 states is a word of great conflict. It says in verse 1 of chapter 10. We read today that it literally drains Daniel of all his strength. We had mentioned in Not So Trivial Trivia, he falls asleep because he just runs out of energy and he just keels over. That's why he just falls asleep in the middle of it. Then he gets woken up by an angel, and he gets kind of, the angel, heavenly being, whatever it is, kind of picks him up, and he just sits there on all fours trembling, is all the strength he has after he gets woken up that way. And then he's asked to respond. He says he can't, like he just can't, so he's touched on the lips, and then all he can get out is just, "I can't breathe." That's all that comes out of him, and he has to get touched again, and then he has to be miraculously helped to be able to just speak in the face of this vision. So it's a very powerful thing, and I want to read today by just reading the first verse. Verse 1, "In the third year of Cyrus, king of Persia, a word was revealed to Daniel, who was named Belteshazzar. And the word was true, and it was a great conflict, and he understood the word and had understanding of the vision." There's enough in that one verse to talk for a minute. The Bible, in chapter 1, described Daniel as an attractive young man, but he's not a young man anymore. Now we're in the end. This is the last chronologically. I know the chronology gets messed up kind of weird in the second half of the book, but chronologically, this is the last thing we ever see of Daniel. And he's at least in his mid-80s by now, possibly older than that. Mid-80s is the absolute youngest he could possibly be at this time, depending on when he was brought to Babylon. And so we know he's older. It's a pretty good long life for someone who lived before the age of modern medicine, right? Like he's been kicking for a while before any medical help or anything like that. And I think that's why there might be that odd note in the first verse. It says the odd note is that he's named Belteshazzar. When was the last time he was called Belteshazzar? Like a whole dynasty ago. Like they stopped calling him Belteshazzar a long time ago. The current dynasty hasn't cared that his name used to be Belteshazzar, because they're a new line of kings. We'd seen notes that they'd kind of stopped calling him that, because he kind of earned the right to be called by his real name before halfway through the book even. And so he refers to himself as Belteshazzar here, and it's kind of odd. I think the reason why is because he's kind of saying, yeah, I'm still here. I'm Daniel, this is my vision, the same Daniel you knew about. I think it's kind of like a pay attention note. It's kind of like the, yes, that Daniel. I'm the guy who stood up to Nebuchadnezzar. I'm the guy who slept peacefully with lions. I'm the guy who did all that stuff. That's the Daniel whose the vision this is right now. I think that's kind of why he says his name Belteshazzar, because otherwise it's like, why are you referring to your pagan name that is contrary to God? But that's what it is. I think it's saying, hey, listen up. I think it's what's being said there with that. Another thing about this first verse that we can point out is that it's the third year of Cyrus. Those of you who haven't been with us the whole time, maybe you missed this sermon, but those of you who, you won't possibly know this, but those of you who were with us, what's special about Cyrus and the exiles in Babylon? Or maybe you happen to know, I don't know. If you know your Old Testament history, Cyrus is the guy who sent all the exiles home. His first year, it is the Edict of Cyrus. The exiles get to go home from Babylon, but we see here that Daniel, and we'll see where he starts telling about where he is, he's still in Babylon. And it's the third year of Cyrus. That's another interesting note. Daniel did not go home with all the other Jews, which is really curious. And that's actually an apologetics lesson. Apologetics is the study for evidence of why faith is accurate and real. And that's apologetics. It's evidence that Daniel's a real person, because there are some people who teach he's just a mythical hero that the Jews invented when they're in exile, because there's no way somebody did all these cool things. They just made him up. But if they made him up to be the mythical hero, wouldn't like his final achieving moment beginning to go home? But he doesn't. So it's, we don't know why he didn't go home, but it's kind of proof for him being a real person, is that he didn't go home. And possibly one reason he was just too old to make the journey. Another reason is that he's too powerful, like too important. The king was going to say, yeah, everybody else can go home, but you're kind of my favorite person and the most wise guy I've ever met, so you're going to stick around. That could have been another reason why. We don't know. Regardless, he's still in Babylon. But he knows that things are happening in Jerusalem. The book of Ezra is taking place while this chapter happens. The book of Ezra is when they get home and they're having a rough time. They're not doing so hot now they've made it. It's like, yeah, we made it home, and everything is broken and in shambles, and people want to kill us. That's what happens when they get home. And so that's not good news. And so Daniel, who's in the upper echelon of court, is probably hearing the reports of the exiles who have gone home. He's hearing this news that his friends, his loved ones, the people he's watched grow up amidst exiles, who he's super excited they get to go home and live in their own place finally, he's hearing the reports about how they're not doing very well. And later on in those stories, we read about how they were trying to rebuild the city with swords in one hand and tools in the other because they were under threats so much. And so that's the context of probably what's going on with Daniel. He's heard about this stuff. He's at the end of his life. He knows his friends have gone home, but they're not having a good time at it. And that's sort of what he's been looking forward to his entire life, is getting to go home. And that's where we are at in this context. Let's read the next three verses, verse 2 through 4. In those days, I, Daniel, was mourning for 3 weeks. I ate no delicacies, no meat or wine entered my mouth, nor did I anoint myself at all for the full 3 weeks. On the 24th day of the first month, as I was standing on the bank of the great river, that is the Tigris. So he stands on the bank of the Tigris River. The Tigris River is a huge river. In some spots, it's got a mile-wide span. That's a big river, and he's watching it flow. Many other times, poetically and in other prophets, rivers are used to illustrate the flow of time and the passing of history. And so what better spot to receive a vision about the flow of time and the passing of history here? It's a fitting place for that. But he's probably thinking of his history. He's probably thinking of the history to come that's been revealed to him. He knows history in the future at this point. He's got a lot of that in his head, and he's probably thinking about all these things. We see that he's fasting. He's not totally fasting. He's just fasting from delicacies, so he's not having anything like great. He's not letting himself like have any pleasures of food or things like that. It also says he didn't anoint himself, which is like our equivalent of taking showers. Like he's really holding back from giving himself the good things in life. He's been doing this for 3 weeks, and it also tells us what month and what day it is that we get this vision. The month and day tells us that the Jewish celebration of Passover would have ended 2 or 3 days ago, which is interesting because the Jewish celebration of Passover is supposed to be the most celebratory, happy days of the Jewish calendar. It's kind of like before Hanukkah, it was like their Christmas almost. It's supposed to be like the, yeah, this is awesome, God saved us from Egypt celebration. And he mourned before it, he mourned through it, and now we see that he's still mourning after it, which is, it's sad to see someone like the most, What's the happiest day on the calendar there is? And to see someone mourning consistently through the whole thing. I'm guessing he's probably wondering about the wars to come that he's seen in his visions. He's probably thinking about his friends who went back home. Possibly he even had family that went back home. We don't know, but he knows they're facing trouble. He knows they're going to face even more trouble. They haven't even seen the half of the trouble they're going to face, because these visions he saw, a lot of them were about those people just a couple more generations down the line. And in the midst of his contemplative mourning, he does something that's probably recommended for anyone who's mourning. He looks up. Literally, like, looks up. And that's this next verse, verses 5 through 9. It says, "I lifted up my eyes and looked, and behold, a man clothed in linen with a belt of fine gold from Uphaz around his waist. His body was like beryl, his face like the appearance of lightning, his eyes like flaming torches, his arms and legs like the gleam of burnished bronze, and the sound of his words like the sound of a multitude. And I, Daniel, alone saw the vision, for the men who were with me did not see the vision, but a great trembling fell upon them, and they fled to hide themselves. So I was left alone, and I saw this great vision, and no strength was left in me. My radiant appearance was fearfully changed, and I retained no strength. Then I heard the sound of his words, and as I heard the sound of his words, I fell on my face in deep sleep with my face to the ground." Now, those of you who might know the book of Revelation well, or maybe you study the book of Revelation, or as we're going through Daniel, especially we see this, there's lots of stuff from Daniel that gets picked up in Revelation. There's lots of parallels with it. There's lots of shadowing of the book of Daniel in the book of Revelation, maybe reflections of it. Many of the same descriptions, many of the same things happen, and here's one of those things that happens, you know, half a millennia later to John himself, too. The appearance of someone like a man that's so powerful it just saps everything they are. It says Daniel just falls over in sleep. John says he fell over like he was dead, and they just keel over in the face of someone from heaven revealing their glory. It just makes people pass out, which is interesting to think about. It just knocks humans over, right, like that. Granted, we know that John was faced with Jesus glorified, so we never given the identity of this person who speaks with Daniel. A lot of people say it's probably Jesus, because a lot of the things are similar. There's a couple other things that make that confusing, though. All we know for sure, and we also don't know how many people Daniel ends up speaking to in this chapter, because it's ambiguous. Sometimes, like, it could be one person, it could be multiple people Daniel hears from. We don't know. All we know is that this is a really powerful, glorified being that's showing up and speaking to Daniel. And can you blame Daniel, though, for simply passing out? Because, I mean, look at the description. He's clothed in linen, which is the garment of priests, white linen, but it's got a belt of gold, and it says his body is beryl. Beryl, does anyone know what beryl is? It's kind of a generic crystallite term. It's emeralds a lot of time. But there's also be lots of different colors. So it's not a description of his color. It's a description of his build. He's crystalline. He's rock solid, maybe, you could say. Other translations say like topaz or jasper. It says his face is like lightning. It says his eyes are flaming torches. His legs are gleaming like reflective bronze. And this is the cool part. When he speaks, it's like a multitude of voices. That'd be crazy to hear. I mean, when the Apostle Paul... first account of Jesus on the road to Damascus, only Paul was able to see Jesus, and everybody else knew something else was going on, and that's similar here in this case. The people with Daniel have no idea what's going on. The only thing that they can get in their heads, though, is run. And so they scatter, and Daniel's just sitting here, and it says his radiant appearance was changed, which is probably a reference to he's usually looked like a really happy guy. His radiant appearance is like he's always a chipper guy, he's always smiling, it's always great to see his face, and it was changed. This guy who's always smiling, and the guy who, by the way, you know, faced some of the craziest things ever. He's seen the craziest visions ever. He's been thrown in lions' dens. He stood bravely against all those things. It says he is drained of strength and he's fearful. And so he's drained of strength, and this person that something like a man speaks, and Daniel just passes out. That's what happens there. And then we continue reading in the verses 10 through 14. "And behold, a hand touched me and set me trembling on my hands and knees. And he said to me, O Daniel, man greatly loved, understand the words that I speak to you and stand upright, for now I have been sent to you. And when he had spoken this word to me, I stood up trembling. Then he said to me, Fear not, Daniel, for from the first day that you set your heart to understand and humbled yourself before your God, your words have been heard. And I have come because of your words. The prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me 21 days. But Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me. For I was left there with the kings of Persia and came to make you understand what is to happen to your people in the latter days. For the vision is for days yet to come." So a hand kind of picks him up, I imagine like just grabbing him and like picking him up, because then he's on all fours in this. He's still trembling on his hands and knees. And the voice says, "Daniel, you are greatly loved," which if you see a being like that show up, it's a good thing to hear you're greatly loved. It's a lot better than hearing "watch out" or "silence" or "shut up" or something like that. It's really handy when a heavenly being says, "You're greatly loved." Just thought, I'd much rather hear that than something else. And then we learn why Daniel's been fasting. I mean, we weren't really told. We could kind of guess some reasons. But this being tells him, from the first day that you set your heart to understand and humbled yourself before God, and he makes a reference to 21 days, which is how long he's been fasting. So probably his fasting, his mourning has been to find understanding and to humble himself before God. That's what happens here. Daniel was humbling himself. He was asking the Lord for understanding. This passage really parallels the passage when Nebuchadnezzar turns into like a beast man, because there Nebuchadnezzar is looking out over Babylon. Here Daniel's looking out over Babylon. And Nebuchadnezzar tried to lift himself up, and he was changed to a man. And this one, Daniel, lowers himself down, and he gets understanding and a vision. Someone who's been one of the most powerful world leaders, and he's world-renowned for his ability to learn and his ability to understand, he humbles himself, and he realizes God knows more, and God's more powerful, and he seeks God for that. And it reminds me of that verse we read at the beginning of service. We heard Willie read beginning out of 1 Peter 5, that God opposes the proud but gives grace to the humble. Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, so that at the proper time he may exalt you, casting all your anxieties on him because he cares for you. Also reminds me of James 4:10, humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord, and he shall lift you up. And Daniel was literally lifted up. He was picked back up when he fell down here. But before Daniel's told the understanding he's about to receive, we get these really weird comments in this chapter about the prince of Persia and what in the world is happening there. I don't know about you. Maybe you zoned out as you read it, but I'm like, what? We figure out here that the prince of Persia has been fighting with this heavenly, really cool being that's like crazy awesome. They've been fighting, and he was held back for 21 days until Michael showed up and put the prince of Persia in his place. Does that confuse anyone else as to what in the world is happening here? Right? Like, that's just weird to hear about, that there's this prince of Persia, and somehow the prince of Persia can fight this person whose being is powerful enough that Daniel just keels over when he sees him. That's what is going on. We realize it's not like a mystical vision, like the beasts coming out of the sea. It's not like that, because this is this angelic divine being, whatever it is, saying, this is what happened. He's not like telling him a vision. He's saying, this is what was going on. And so to say, I'll just admit, I don't know who the prince of Persia is. It's not a human. We know that much, because how could a human stand against this really cool being whose body is like crystals and stuff? So it's some form of spiritual heavenly being, something like that. But then why in the world is it called the prince of Persia, is the other question. And then some people develop a whole theology of are certain heavenly beings assigned to specific nations. And that, I don't know, the Bible hints at it a couple times, but that's all we have is just a couple hints. And to develop a whole theology on just a few hints in the Bible is not necessarily the wisest thing to do. It's as long as it doesn't like force into other theologies. If it's just like, hey, what if this stuff happens, then that's okay. But the hints of the Bible, though, shouldn't be used to like change the things that are firm and fixed in the Bible. But that's the issue with like the spiritual realms and heavenly beings, things like that. There's no fixed data in the Bible. It's all just hints. And like you get a couple curtains peeled back a few times, really briefly, and then shut again. And it's just all little hints. And so we end up not having much of a clue to stand on, but there are some hints there. And here's one of these hints. It seems like, at least at this one opportunity, there is a spiritual being of some kind that's the prince of Persia in charge of that area, fighting, keeping Daniel from receiving a message of understanding. He was fighting while Daniel was fasting. 3 weeks, 21 days, the heavenly realm was abuzz with activity on Daniel's behalf. That's that much we've got, at least. Being so awesome, it makes Daniel near wed himself, was stuck in a struggle with an evil prince of some kind. That's what we've got here. God's messenger, though, was fighting to bring good news to Daniel. And Satan apparently did not want that. I'm not one of those people who sees demons behind every door. Like, I don't think there's like a demon of car trouble or like a demon of bad sleep. But I'd be pretty foolish to think, though, that sometimes demonic activity does cause some of those things. But, like, I don't think anytime there's something bad, oh, there must be a demon there, we should go try and attack it. Sometimes there's just random things that happen that are bad. Sometimes it's from our own stupidity that things are bad. Sometimes, though, I do think that there's demonic activity, but a lot of times we don't have the understanding or the clarity or wisdom to know which is which. But I will say, praying is always a good thing, and no matter what are those circumstances, so do that in those cases. But here, Daniel was praying, and he wasn't just praying. He was abstaining from fine things in life for 3 weeks. How often do we fast from things that we enjoy for understanding from God or to humble ourselves before God? Or how quickly do we give up on prayer because perhaps there's a heavenly struggle taking place on our behalf? We don't know if it's always happening. It could be happening. I don't know. But how often do we give up after, like, one prayer or, like, a day or something? And here's Daniel going on actively, like, without ceasing, because he would have been feeling the hunger. Like, I get cravings for good, greasy food after a few days of not having it. And so Daniel would have been having maybe some of that, too. But we learn about the struggle on Daniel's behalf, and it ended when Michael shows up. And Michael is the chief of princes. His name means who is like God. So his very being is a reference to God's authority. And he's known as the chief of princes of God's people. He shows up, and the fight's just over. Which also tells us that different heavenly beings have different levels of power and strength, which is another weird thing to think about, but I guess it makes sense. But yeah, so Michael shows up, and the fight is over. And after hearing this, Daniel just curls up into a ball and starts crying. It's basically what happens. Let's read verses 15 through 21. When he had spoken to me according to these words, I turned my face towards the ground and was mute. And behold, one in the likeness of the children of man touched my lips. Then I opened my mouth and spoke. I said to him who stood before me, O my Lord, by reason of the vision, pains have come upon me, and I retain no strength. How can my Lord's servant talk with my Lord? For now no strength remains in me, and no breath is left in me. Again, one having the appearance of a man touched me and strengthened me, and he said, O man greatly loved, fear not, peace be with you. Be strong and of good courage. And as he spoke to me, I was strengthened and said, Let my Lord speak, for you have strengthened me. Then he said, Do you know why I have come to you? But now I will return to fight against the prince of Persia, and when I go out, behold, the prince of Greece will come. But I will tell you what is inscribed in the book of truth. There is none who contends by my side against these except Michael, your prince. After Daniel's touched and strengthened a couple of times, the introduction finally starts to wrap up, this introduction of chapter 10. The heavenly being that looks like a man finally just says, Do you know why I'm here? And so he tells Daniel, he's saying, Hey, do you know why I'm here, Daniel? Stop, just listen to me for a minute and quit passing out, maybe is what he's thinking. Do you know why I'm here? And before answering, he drops the hint that there's this other demonic force, the prince of Greece, who's going to fight too, and that's strange. He just drops that without really explaining at all. But then he says the reason why he's here. He says, I'm going to tell you what's inscribed in the book of truth. And that's, I mean, that hearing that would make you want to perk up your ears, right? So there's this book of truth that I'm going to get to hear about here. And then chapter 11, the meat of the vision, it starts. But we're going to save that for next week because, one, it's also crazy long. That vision is really long. But so what can we get out of chapter 10? It's just the introduction. So what's there for us to hear? And one thing I think is Scripture, speaking of spiritual forces, that there's these things going on. Scripture often speaks of spiritual forces. Jesus spoke about the ability that at any moment he wanted, he could call 12 legions of angels to be at his side. Jesus speaks with Satan at one point. In Revelation, we read that there's at least one future battle of going on between messengers of heaven and messengers of the devil. We see here what was happening around Daniel's life while he was praying. There's this, I guess, regional dark force that was fighting against Daniel, receiving understanding and being lifted up by God. He was fighting against that. And now I do think you can take spiritual stuff too far. Like I've met with and spoken with several times someone who didn't want to take some modern medicine because she thought all of her problems were spiritual. I don't think that's the wisest thing. My very non-professional guess of this person was that her heart was really in the right place, so her issues weren't a spiritual thing. It was that she needed some medication, is what my very non-professional guess was. But talking to this person, sometimes our problems in life aren't spiritual at all, per se, but I think we often, though, discount the relationship between physical and spiritual quite often. Sometimes our problems might be the work of Satan attempting to stand against us. And I think that the average person probably doesn't take the spiritual realm seriously enough. And a lot of times we get weirded out when people start talking about angels and demons, but we get excited when we hear like a seminar on like different levels of dimensions. There could be billions of types of dimensions and life teeming and all these different areas, or a multiverse theory, and we're like, oh, that sounds cool, let's listen to that. But then we get weirded out when someone talks about angels and demons. I don't know. It's not so weird because the scripture actually tells us that that stuff's going on. We only get little hints and we only get little shadows. But we should definitely work to involve, you would think, the heavenly realm into our lives. Wouldn't we want that? We want that. And we see that it actually happens in Daniel's life, that this is going on. We learn one thing from today's chapter, let alone the vision that's coming, that's going to be important, because what other visions have cool introductions like that? But we learn another thing, is that no matter what Satan's demons throw at us, God's got another angel waiting in the wings that's bigger and stronger. And that's cool news. We see this angel, like, how cool is this heavenly being that shows up and makes Daniel wet himself, and yet it was stopped by a demon, but then, hey, we got this other thing that just stops the fight. That's even stronger than that one over here, just waiting for the right moment. One question I have, though, is why in the world did Daniel have to keep praying and fasting for 3 weeks before God sent another angel to help deliver the message? Why didn't it happen like right that day? Daniel might have liked that or preferred that, and I have no idea. The Bible does not tell us the answer to that. But I do know that throughout the book of Daniel, we see that God's in charge of time. That's one thing we see very obviously throughout the book of Daniel. Like, God knows how history's going. He knows the right timing to do things. He can handle these things. And so if God has a better grasp on time than we do, I think God was okay with Daniel waiting 3 weeks to get this understanding and this being lifted up. And so it means that it's probably okay if we've got to wait sometimes for some understanding. We have no idea what's going on in the spiritual realm around us. Maybe there's something going on that God's just waiting for the right timing. But we know that God's stronger and he can just show up and end the struggles at any moment. And sometimes it'd be nice if he just ended them quickly. But we see throughout the book of Daniel, he's in charge of these things, and he knows what's best, and he knows how to handle it. We see one note in Scripture that one reason why God's waiting for certain things to happen is because he's wanting more people to be saved. I mean, I would love it. I think Jesus could in any moment just show up and save the world. But we see that God's waiting for that because he wants us to do our job of sharing the gospel with other people, and he wants more people to get to go to heaven. But we see throughout the book of Daniel, and Daniel chapter 10 is included, that despite present appearances, despite things that we don't even appear, things that are happening around us that we don't see, God is in control. And so even though there was this struggle happening for 3 weeks with stuff that we have no clue what to take of it, I mean, people will talk about it for a long time about what those things meant, but I'll just be honest, we don't know. We don't know what was going on there, but God just ended it like that. We see that much here in chapter 10. Daniel was mourning because his people were in pain. He was in pain as well. He gets even in more pain during this chapter. It says these visions that are coming to him were causing him pain. But a heavenly being who defies description shows up to deliver a message about the book of truth. And we learn that Satan fought really hard against the book of truth showing up to Daniel, but God won the fight. And that word came to Daniel. And we'll talk about the word next week and the week after that. But we see here that God can win any fight. And that's the introduction to this vision, I think, that God wins, which is good news. So please pray with me. God, I thank you that you have angels waiting in the wings, that you've got Michael, you've got archangels, you've got any bajillions of forces at your side. But God, we thank you that you are the most powerful of any one of them, more powerful than all of those things combined. And God, we thank you that, as we got to remember during this communion time, that you showed up as man for us. And that we don't even have to rely on angels, we don't have to rely on ministering spirits or hoping for Michael. We know that you've saved us now with your son who's the most powerful. So God, we thank you for that. We ask that you do it in your timing, but we do ask that you come. Come quickly, Lord Jesus. For there are many struggles here that we know you could solve just like that. But let us humble ourselves before you so that you may lift us up. And ask this in Jesus' powerful name. Amen.